Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, May 30th. Today, we're talking to Sun business reporter Tamara Chung about recent changes in Colorado laws regarding broadband build-out. Before we start, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance is a workers' comp provider that's now offering enhanced coverage across the country. Pinnacle provides protection to Colorado businesses as they grow, no matter where that may be. Pinnacle goes where Colorado businesses go. Visit Pinnacle, that's PINNACOL.com for more information. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Alan True was born in Colorado Springs on this day in 1881 and earned a reputation as one of the Centennial State's most popular and prolific artists. True spent his youth in the western United States and Mexico, imbued with the richness of a continent in transformation and a deep affection for its landscape and cultures. In the late 1890s, his family settled in Denver. He discovered a love of art while studying at the University of Denver. He pursued his work with illustrators along the East Coast. True's first show took place in Denver in 1908, and he moved back to his home state to produce murals for homes, libraries, and movie theaters. In the late 1910s, he won his first major commissions to paint murals for the Wyoming State Capitol and Missouri State House. In the 1920s, True provided art for several Denver projects, including the Temples and Civic Center, the Colorado National Bank, and the Mountain States Telephone and Telegraph Company. Work slowed during the Great Depression, but he restored art in the Teller House and Opera House in Central City, painted murals honoring transportation for the Brown Palace Hotel, and commemorated the role of water in the West through a series of murals installed at the Colorado State Capitol. Wyoming officials also hired True to design the Bucking Bronco logo, still used on state license plates. True's last works found homes in Denver's City and County Building and the University of Colorado. True died in Denver in 1955. Next, our feature story.
All right, we're rocking and rolling. Hey, thanks for plugging into the Colorado Sun Sun Up podcast today, everyone. I am David Krause, one of the team editors here at the Colorado Sun, and I am thrilled, as always, to be joined on a Tuesday with Sun business reporter Tamara Chung. Hey there, Tamara.
Hey, David.
Hey, let's jump right into it. We are going to do a little schooling today on this new state law about internet and cities being able to build their own infrastructure, kind of a repeal of what happened. The listener today, you all are getting a good balance because I am somebody who still doesn't know what MBPS stands for when you talk about gig internet speeds. And Tamara has been covering this stuff for, what, 2 decades, Tamara?
Two plus.
So there you go. So let's just jump right in. Back in 2005, there was a state law about cities trying to build their own infrastructure to get faster internet. Let's just start there. What was happening back in 2005, Tamara? And, it was kind of a different era. So kind of lead us up to what that was so we can get going about what it means for the future.
Sure. So back in 2005, Colorado passed a law that prevented a municipality from looking into internet service. And, the reason back then or the rationale was you don't want your city government to waste taxpayer money on building internet service. And, that probably makes a lot of sense. I mean, back then it was a different time and era. I mean, there were still lots of people on dial-up modems. I don't even know if most people had heard of gigabit internet, but gigabit internet is, it's 1,000 times faster than a 1 megabit. And I think, David, you mentioned that you tested your speeds and you're getting pretty fast connections here at 500 or something.
Yes, I live in Salida. I have a Spectrum and I paid up for the 500 and I tested just before we got on. And again, I still don't quite get it, but my download was 516 and my upload was 22.14. So as long as things are going and we can record these podcasts, that was my biggest goal. I opted not to get the gig because it was like another $20 a month. And I thought I'd see, because actually, I think I called you and Eric Lubers, our guru of all things technology, and they were both like, get the 500.
I mean, 500, that's half a gig. So, you know, and most people don't even need a gigabit, honestly, but gigabit is kind of what you would expect from fiber internet. And fiber internet meaning the actual fiber optic cable that's coming to your house from, you know, either, you know, the local internet service. I mean, we're not getting wireless speeds that fast, of course, but, you know, for the most part, you would want higher speeds in, if you have many people in your house trying to all get online at the same time or do video chats or watch movies. And that's really the need. It's kind of this multi-user service and speed that will help households do like several, you know, especially during the pandemic, you know, lots of remote learning, working from home, you know, that sort of thing. But getting back to 2005, so this law got passed. And, you know, the thing about it was the main sponsors of the bill or the main financial supporters for the bill was the cable companies. And if you think about it, you know, the cable companies were, you know, their big business was cable TV. But they were getting, they were already starting to offer internet service. And I think, you know, I should have looked this up before this podcast, but from what I remember, we were getting probably 5 megabits back then, 7 or 8 megabits, you know, and that you weren't watching videos on it, or because there wasn't really much available, maybe YouTube videos or something. But for the most part, people were still, you know, just doing internet browsing, checking email, audio. You know, MP3s, streaming music. That was probably a big thing because the iPod was about to come out. I think that was 2007.
Yeah, right. I remember that was the iPod. But yeah, to your point, it was streaming music, checking emails, and maybe doing the new thing called the Facebook.
Right. And the other reason why this came about, though, the back in 2005, was that the town of Longmont actually had a fiber ring in their city. They had built it in the mid-90s, and it was really for communications for, you know, police or, you know, lots of emergency communication that the city needed. And they were trying to figure out, well, hey, we already have this built. How can we use it to help our residents? Maybe we can offer internet service because, you know, at the time, as I was saying, you know, the competition was offering much lower speeds. Prices were, you know, arguably expensive. You know, no one was really offering gigabit internet. But Longmont, if they built this using their fiber network, they could actually offer gigabit fiber back in 2005. So that's why they started looking into this. But this law prevented them from offering it just using their electrical. They have a city-owned electrical utility, and they were just going to build it out from there. But this prevented that. Although I should, let me just add one more thing. The main thing about this law, though, was that there was a way out of it. And the way out was a vote. If you could get your community to vote to opt out of this law, then you can go forward and do it.
Okay, so let's pick it up from there, right? So Longmont tries, they don't get it passed, because they didn't quite, you know, like you wrote in the story last week, they didn't quite understand that there was going to be blowback. And as a municipality, they cannot campaign for a question on a ballot. So in the meantime, some other people see what, you know, how they kind of not dropped the ball, but how they missed out, do a couple of things. And then all of a sudden, you've got more than 150 communities have opted out of this law. But so what does that mean, Tamara? Does that mean there's greater internet access in all of those places?
Well, the thing about the law is just by opting out, that doesn't mean your city or, you know, local government is going to build internet service. I mean, that's not even part of this law. What this does was it really just allowed municipalities to explore the idea. So for Longmont, for example, their first attempt to get that vote, it failed, and that's because, you know, nobody knew what gigabit was. Nobody really understood the potential of it. But there were members of the community who did understand, and I think they were shocked that it didn't pass. So a citizen group kind of rallied the community, and Longmont did it again 2 years later, and it passed overwhelmingly. So they moved forward and started, by 2014 or 2015, they were able to start offering gigabit internet to their community. And by then, lots of communities had heard about faster internet and the need, how communities, if you rely on faster internet, you could attract more businesses to your community. I mean, there were just a lot of advantages. So multiple communities started opting out. And some of them did go on to build their own systems. But then there were some cities like, for example, Centennial. They opted out, and then they built like this middle mile pipe throughout the city. So that's basically a big pipe going through the city, but not going to people's homes. Then they hired or partnered with a company called Ting, which then leased some of that pipe. And now Ting is all over Centennial offering gigabit internet. And that's been the case for a lot of communities. But then I should also say that some communities opted out. They spent the money to put it on the ballot and opted out, and then decided, you know what? It's too expensive. We can't do this. And just went out and partnered with someone else. I mean, I think Lakewood and Westminster have recently announced they partnered with Google Fiber. And Google Fiber is going to be building it in those communities. I think it's in the story, but Lakewood, I believe, is next year or later this year, or, should go live with the service later this year or next year. And I think Westminster is maybe still up in the air, but sometime next year, probably.
All right. So let's spin it forward then. Great review on kind of how this has changed. It's so interesting how Longmont in 2009, like you said, tried, failed because people didn't quite get it back then. Then they were able to get it. So all these places have opted out. The law hasn't changed until this year. So let's kind of walk through what changed this year and also the why of what changed and why it's important going forward, Tamara.
Sure. So there actually were attempts to change the law in the past, but I think it was just too complicated because, both sides wanted, or the multiple sides wanted their little piece of it. So this year, it was really critical to remove the law, at least by the Colorado Broadband Office. And if you have been keeping track of my other stories on broadband here in Colorado, there is a lot of money coming our way, Colorado's way, from the federal government, and it's up to $1 billion to really finish building out the infrastructure to those rural communities who have, after all these years, they've still been overlooked and they still don't have decent internet service. So a lot of that federal money, though, there's some confusion as to, if there's any sort of restriction on local governments, they might not be eligible. So the Colorado Broadband Office decided this has to be a priority. We got to get rid of this vote. So there's no question that these communities, which need it the most, that the state can provide the funding for them to build the infrastructure. And for them, meaning, the state or a private partner, private ISP that needs to build it. And that's why this happened this year, as opposed to last year or, the several other years that they attempted to do this.
So Tamara, ISP is internet service provider. I think I'm pretty good at that. So what does that mean? You've written, like you mentioned, I think we're looking at maybe $1 billion to help add infrastructure. You wrote earlier this year about people needing to send in their testing results and all that. So give us what is this? How is this going to help us in the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months? What's that timeline like?
So actually, at the end of June, we're going to find out how much money Colorado is getting through it's the BEAD Act, which is, I should have looked this up too. I always forget the acronym. But, every state is getting like $100 million to build some of this but like some of the rest of the money is based on the need within that community. So in communities that have very limited or no internet, they'll get more money. And that's why the state has been trying to get people to test out the system and report it back to the FCC to make sure that their communities and houses actually are counted. So June 30th, I believe, is when we'll find out. There's other projects down the line as well. So once some of that comes out, then we'll start hearing about the grants available to private ISPs and these local municipalities who are already building this stuff out. And I mean, the idea, of course, is to get everyone to at least 100 megabits. And that's everyone, like rural Colorado. So everyone out there, hopefully this will be coming your way soon. We will see, though, because, you know, obviously there's been a lot of federal money given to broadband infrastructure in the past two decades, but there's still a digital divide even in Colorado.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that people can maybe put their head around a little bit better, is that the digital divide and trying to lessen it. I think people really learned what that meant during the pandemic, like you said, when you had, you know, our case, our senior in high school learning, and my wife and I both working from home in a small place. So, Tamara, I know we could chat about this for a lot longer because this has been one of our longer episodes with just you and I. And so it's just great to have you and your knowledge and being one of the preeminent broadband journalists, seriously, in the country. I think it's just really awesome for us. So thanks for learning me up a little bit more and kind of breaking this down for all of us. If you have any questions or thoughts, you know, give Tamara a shout. We've said before, we're really easy to reach here at the Colorado Sun. Her email is tamara@coloradosun.com. She'll continue to cover all of this broadband stuff, especially as we find out, like you said, in the end of June, how much Colorado's going to get. So thanks, Tamara, and thanks to everybody for listening today. If you want to read more business news about Colorado, go to thecoloradosun.com/business, and there you can also sign up for Tamara's free weekly newsletter called What's Working, where she wraps up all this kind of stuff as well as stuff around the business world. Tamara, have a great week.
You too, O.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The network of massive bathtubs that make up the Colorado River Basin's reservoir storage system is going to see some recovery this summer thanks to higher-than-average snowpack. Overuse and a 23-year drought have drawn down the water stored in reservoirs across the basin, which spans seven states. Water officials and experts emphasize one good year of snow won't solve the crisis. But this year, the system's largest reservoirs, including Blue Mesa near Gunnison, will end the year with more water than they had at the start, and water managers don't foresee any need for drought-related releases. A Colorado Sun survey of 16 Colorado County coroners shows at least 17 people died while visiting the state's ski areas this winter. Of those who died, 16 were men. There were at least 5 people who died after colliding with a tree, and at least 2 people died after falling into deep snow like a tree well. Colorado ski resorts are not required to report deaths or injuries. This season's statewide count comes from requests made by the Sun to county coroners. There were at least 9 deaths in the 2021-22 season, down from 11 fatalities in the previous winter. Every day, clinicians in county jails across Colorado are asked to decide whether a person with mental illness should be placed in solitary confinement to protect themselves and others. That can inflict what some describe as a moral injury to the jail staff responsible for making those decisions. It can also risk placing a person in housing that worsens their symptoms. Colorado is considered a leader in solitary confinement reform, but there is little help out there for workers whose daily decisions can present ethical dilemmas. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com, and don't forget to tune in again next time. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month for a basic membership, and if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our exclusive politics and outdoors newsletters. Thanks for starting your morning with us, and don't forget to tune in again tomorrow.